So in our last class, we were in Judges chapter 6. We left off around verse 25. Judges 6:25. And this is a section where it starts talking about what Gideon did as far as his father's idol, that he destroyed his father's idol, and then we'll also see this name that he's given because of that, Zerubbabel. So in verse 25, it says, "Now the same night." So the Lord tells him the same night to pull down the altar of Baal, which belonged to his father. And he also tells him to cut down the Asherah that is beside it. So this idol. And then verse 26, it says he's instructed, "Build an altar to the Lord your God on the top of this stronghold in an orderly manner, and take a second bull and offer a burnt offering with the wood of the Asherah, which you shall cut down." So he's given these instructions on what he is to do. So he's to build this altar to the Lord. And he's to use this second bull of his father's and the wood from the idol, the Asherah, that he had torn down. And he's to use these things for this burnt offering. And according to verse 27, it said that he did this at night out of fear. You know, he feared his father's household and the men of the city. So he did this at night. Verse 28 says that when the men of the city arose early in the morning, behold, the altar of Baal was torn down, and the Asherah which was beside it was cut down, and the second bull was offered on the altar. And they said to one another, "Who did this thing?" And when they searched about and inquired, they said, "Gideon the son of Joash did this thing." Then the men of the city said to Joash, "Bring out your son, that he may die, for he has torn down the altar of Baal, and indeed he has cut down the Asherah which was beside it." So they tell Joash to bring him out so that he can die for what he had done. But then we have Joash's reply, because he did not do as they had asked. 31 says that, "But Joash said to all who stood against him, 'Will you contend for Baal, or will you deliver him? Whoever will plead for him shall put to death, or shall be put to death by morning. If he is a god, let him contend for himself, because someone has torn down his altar.'" So basically says that, you know, let him contend for himself. And that's where we get this name. Verse 32 says, "Therefore," or because of that, these things that took place, "on that day he," Joash, "named him," talking about Gideon, "he named him Zerubbabel." And that is to say, let Baal contend against him. So let Baal contend against him because of what he has done. So that is the name that we'll start seeing. And then in 33, we see all the Midianites and all the Amalekites and the sons of the east assembled themselves. And so the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon, and he blew a trumpet. And the Abizrites were called together to follow him. And he sent messengers throughout Manasseh, and they also were called together to follow him. And he sent messengers to Asher, Zebulun, and Naphtali, and they came up to meet them. Verse 36. Once again, we see here that Gideon wants a sign. If you remember back a little previously, there's what we talked about in our other class, but in verse 13, we saw that Gideon mentioned or was talking about the miracles that they had heard about from their fathers, that what they had told them. Saw that in 13b. And then in 17, chapter 6, verse 17, he wanted a sign. And if you remember, the reason for that sign was to confirm that who he was speaking to confirm that that was God that he was speaking to. Now in 6:36, he wants another sign. Well, actually, he's going to want two signs. But what was it for this time? Verse 36 says that this was to confirm that he was the one that God appointed to be this deliverer. He wanted to be sure that he is the one that God has appointed. And then in verses 37 through 8, we're going to have it describe what this first sign was that would confirm this. So 37 says, "Behold, I will put a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. If there is dew on the fleece only, and it is dry on all the ground, then I will know that thou wilt deliver Israel through me, as thou hast spoken." And it was so. When he arose early the next morning and squeezed the fleece, he drained the dew from the fleece and a bowl full of water. So, he was given this sign as he asked. And it was so. And then in 39 through 40, he's going to ask for another sign. So God confirms these things with the sign again that he requested. 39 said, "Then Gideon said to God, 'Do not let thine anger burn against me,'" because he's going to ask him again for a sign. "Do not let thy anger burn against me that I may speak once more. Please let me make a test once more with the fleece. Let it now be dry only on the fleece and let there be dew on all the ground." And God did so that night, for it was dry only on the fleece and dew was on all the ground. So once again, God allows him this sign. So he does this for him in order that he will know that he is the one that God has chosen to deliver him. Then we get into chapter 7. And in chapter 7, they're getting ready to battle. And I put a question on the lesson. I asked, why does God want to decrease the amount of men that Gideon has for battle? Why would he want to decrease this? Hey, yes, sir, Alex? Exactly. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So he doesn't want them to think it's something they accomplished. What's going to take place when they have success is going to be because God made it happen. So, yes, sir. So that is the reason why he's wanting to decrease this amount of men. And then in verse 3, we see him starting to do that. He's starting to this process of decreasing the number. It says, "Now therefore, come, proclaim in the hearing of the people, saying, whoever is afraid and trembling, let him return and depart from Mount Gilead." So 22,000 people returned, but 10,000 remained. So basically, this is how we're going to weed out some of the people. If you're scared, if you're afraid, then that's who they're going to not use. And then there was 10,000 left. But then we see that was still too many people. So verse 4 says, "Then the Lord said to Gideon, 'The people are still too many. Bring them down to the water, and I will test them for you there. Therefore, it shall be that he of whom I say to you, this one shall go with you, he shall go with you. But everyone of whom I say to you, this one shall not go with you, he shall not go.'" And then verses 6 through 7 is where we get our number. Said the now, the, well, let me read 5. "So he brought the people down to the water, and the Lord said to Gideon, 'You shall separate everyone who laps the water with his tongue, as a dog laps, as well as everyone who kneels to drink.'" So everybody's going to get some water. You're either going to do it one of two ways, and that's how they're going to separate them. So the ones that ended up lapping the water, that was the ones that were separated. Verse 7, "And the Lord said to Gideon, 'I will deliver you with the 300 men.'" And those were the 300 that were that lapped the water. "I will deliver you with the 300 men who lapped, and will give the Midianites into your hands. So let all the people go, each man to his home." So now we have our 300 people, or our 300 men. And they have decreased this number quite a bit. Because remember, when we saw in verse 3, it was talking about they were started off at 22,000. And now we're down to 300. And that's the amount of men that the Lord is pleased with. Now, we see in verse 10, because remember, now I've said in one of the earlier classes, Gideon seemed to have some doubt. And we see in verse 10 that God tells him something. It says, "But if you are afraid to go down, go with Purah, your servant, down to the camp." So if he is afraid, he needs to go to this camp. And so when he goes to this camp, this isn't their camp. It says, "Now the Midianites," and we can confirm that from, I believe it's verse 15. We can look at that in a second if you have any questions on that. But it says, "Now the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the sons of East were lying in the valley as numerous as locusts. And their camels were without number, as numerous as the sand on the seashore." Now, when I get to this camp, it says, "When Gideon came, behold, a man was relating a dream to his friend. And he said, 'Behold, I had a dream. A loaf of barley bread was tumbling into the camp of Midian, and it came to the tent and struck it so that it fell and turned it upside down so that the tent lay flat.' And his friend answered and said, 'This is nothing less than the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. God has given Midian and all the camp into his hands.'" So, as God said he would be, now at this point, Gideon was strengthened. He was strengthened. It says in verse 15, "It came about when Gideon heard the account of the dream and its interpretation that he bowed down in worship." And then it says, "He returned to the camp of Israel and said, 'Arise, the Lord has given the camp of Midian into your hands.'" Remember in verse 12, earlier in a previous class, we were talking about this idea of when he was referred to as, "Oh, valiant warrior." Is this why? Could this be why he was referring to him as, "Oh, valiant warrior"? Just something to consider. In verses 19 through 22, we see some confusion going on. Says, "So Gideon and the 100 men who were with him came to the outskirts of the camp. And remember this out says, arise. They go to the outskirts of the camp and beginning at the middle of watch, when they had just posted the watch and they blew the trumpets and smashed the pitchers that were in their hands. When the three companies blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers, they held the torches in their left hands and the trumpets in their right hands for blowing and cried, a sword for the Lord and for Gideon. And each stood in his place around the camp. And all the army ran, crying out as they fled. And when they blew the 300 trumpets, the Lord set the sword of one against another, even throughout the whole army. And the army fled as far as Bethsheba, toward Zerah, as far as the edge of Abel Meholah, by Tabith. So we see this idea, there was some confusion going on as they used these trumpets and these pitchers. And we note that even in, what was that, verse 20, where it said, 22, sorry, and where it says that the Lord had set the sword of one against the other. That's, to me, I'm understanding that there's this confusion. They're so confused that these guys are fighting amongst themselves. So we see all of this taking place. And remember, if y'all have any thoughts or questions, just get my attention. I'm just going to keep on going. Okay? So once you get over to chapter 8, we have the first three verses that where Ephraim contends with Gideon for not calling them to battle. And then we've got 4 through 21 where Gideon completes the victory over the kings of Midian and return to discipline the men of Succoth and Peniel for not assisting his army with food when they were needing sustenance, when they were weary. And 8:32 or 22, sorry, down at verse 22, we start seeing this, talks about this ephod idol. In 22, the men of Israel said to Gideon, rule over us, both you and your son, also your son, for you have delivered us from the hand of Midian. But his response, Gideon says to them, I will not rule over you, nor shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you. But then we get into this, actually where it starts talking about the ephod idol. Yet Gideon said to them, I would request of you that each of you give me an earring from his spoil. For they had gold earrings because they were Ishmaelites. And they said, we will surely give them. So they spread out garments, and every one of them threw an earring there from his spoil. And the weight of the gold earrings that he requested was 1,700 shekels of gold. Besides the present ornaments and the pendants and the purple robes, which were on the kings of Midian. And besides the neck bands that were on their camel's neck. So you have all of this stuff, and Gideon makes this ephod, this idol, a robe. And it says in verse 27, Gideon made it into an ephod, placed it in his city of Ophrah, and all Israel played the harlot with it there, so that it became a snare to Gideon and his household. So it was a snare to them all. And then verse 28, we see how a lot of these sections have been ended. It said that, so Midian was subdued before the sons of Israel, and they did not lift up their hands anymore. and the land was undisturbed 40 years in the days of Gideon. Now we already filled out, what was that, number 4 on our charts last class. But if you haven't, this verse 28, you know, this tells us how long they had rest. So it's at least on mine, on the salvation section, been putting down how long they've had rest, or how long that they've been undisturbed. Okay. So then we have verse 29, Zerubbabel, son of Joash, went and lived in his own house. Now Gideon had 70 sons, and this is a little information about him, who were his direct descendants, for he had many wives. But this is also going to play into our next chapter as well. So Gideon had 70 sons who were his direct descendants, for he had many wives. And then verse 31, and his concubine, who was in Shechem, also bore him a son. And he named him Abimelech. And Gideon, the son of Joash, died at a ripe old age and was buried in the tomb of his father, Joash, in Ophrah of the Abizrites. And then we have, here we go again. Like a lot of these are ending, then it came about as soon as Gideon was dead, as soon as the judge dies, that the sons of Israel again played the harlot with the Baals and made Baal Berith their god. Thus the sons of Israel did not remember the Lord their God, who had delivered them from the hands of all their enemies on every side. Nor did they show kindness to the house of Zerubbabel, that is, Gideon, in accord with all the good that he had done to Israel. So Gideon dies, and then our cycle starts all over again. So that's 6 through 8. And then now we'll get into 9 through 10, 5. Judges 9 through 10, 5. Bear with me a second. Okay. We just mentioned Abimelech and how he was listed different than the other 70 sons. Because it said in verse 31, or actually in 30, Gideon had 70 sons who were his direct descendants, for he had many wives. And then 31, talking about his concubine, who was in Shechem. And she also bore him a son. And that was Abimelech's mother. So they named him Abimelech. So we get into chapter 9, and starts talking about Abimelech. Chapter 9 talks about Abimelech, one of Gideon's sons, Zerubbabel's son. It describes how he and the men of Shechem killed his brothers, except for one of them, the youngest, Jotham. And how Abimelech usurped rule. And this resulted in his death and the death of the men of Shechem. And after his death, we see that in sections 1 through 5 of chapter 10 that Tola and Jair judged Israel. So that's kind of like a little digest of the 9 through 10, 5 that we'll be looking at. We're going to break this down into 6 sections in chapter 9, 1 through 6. We'll see that Abimelech convinces the leaders of Shechem that it would be better for one man to rule over them instead of all the sons of Zerubbabel. And in verses 7 through 21, we're going to see Jotham as the youngest son. He speaks his fable. And then he questions and curses what they did. And 22 through 49, we'll see that Abimelech rules for 3 years. And the trouble that came with that in that time. And Abimelech destroys Shechem and its leaders. And then 50 through 57, Abimelech dies in his fight against Thebes. And then, like we said, in chapter 10, you're going to have these two other judges, just five verses talking about both of them. So 1 through 2, you have Tola of Issachar judges Israel for 23 years. And then in verses 3 through 5, you're going to have Jair of Gilead judge Israel for 22 years. So that's kind of a little breakdown that we're going to see in this section of chapters 9 through 10:5. Now when we go to 9:1, we'll start there. Chapter 9, verse 1. Abimelech, the son of Zerubbabel, went to Shechem. And as we saw in the last chapter, that's where his mother is from. So verse 2 tells us that he convinces or persuades them of something. So he's going to go there, he's going to talk to these people, and he's going to convince them of something. And we're going to see that there are two things that he appeals to. Two things that he appeals to. So let's read verse 1. It says, "And Abimelech the son of Zerubbabel went to Shechem to his mother's relatives and spoke to them and to the whole clan of the household of his mother's father, saying, Speak now in the hearing of all the leaders of Shechem, which is better for you, that 70 men, all the sons of Zerubbabel, rule over you, or that one man rule over you? Also, remember that I am your bone and your flesh." So what is one of the things that he appeals to? What's the thing he appeals to as far as numbers?
Better to have one.
Okay, better have one instead of 70. So that's one of the things he appeals to try to make them think about this or entice them. But if that's not enough, what else does he appeal to? Yeah. Hey, we're blood. So yeah, he tells them that because this is his mother's relatives, and he spoke to the house of his mother's father and appeals to the fact that they're family. It says, "I am your bone and your flesh." And then verse 3, "And his mother's relatives spoke all his words on his behalf in the hearing of all the leaders of Shechem. And they were inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, He is our relative." So he played the family card. And they agreed to that. So we see in verse 4 that Abimelech hired some worthless men, is what it calls them. He hired some worthless men, and they followed him. And they went to Ophrah, and where his father lived, and killed his brothers. It said 70 men on one stone. So they killed his brothers except for the youngest, Jotham, because he hid while this was going on. You see that in verse 4. Now, according to verse 6, what did the men of Shechem do? So they made him king. Remember the appeal, verse 2, only one man, so they made him king. But again, this was him usurping authority. God didn't appoint him. Now, we see that Jotham, the youngest brother, he does something. Verse 7. So, what did Jotham do when he heard? What did he do when he heard what all was going on? Okay. He went to the top of Mount Gerizim and lifted his voice and called out. So in 8 through 15, it's going to describe this, what he said, this fable. Because he said, he lifted his voice and called out, thus he said to them, "Listen to me, O men of Shechem, that God may listen to you." And then it goes into speaking this, this fable that he had said. And then we see in verses 19 that he appeals to Shechem to think about what they have done. Verses 16 and 19 both ask if they think they had dealt in truth and integrity. Let's read verse 19. "If then you have dealt in truth and integrity with Zerubbabel and his house this day, rejoice in Abimelech, and let him also rejoice in you." Then it says, verse 20, though, which is Jotham's curse. After what he says in verses 16 through 19, as far as if you dealt in truth and integrity, then rejoice. But if not, verse 20, "Let fire come out from Abimelech and consume the men of Shechem and Beth Milo, and let fire come out from the men of Shechem and from Beth Milo and consume Abimelech." So that is the curse that it speaks of. And then in 21, Jotham escaped and fled and went to Beer and remained there because of Abimelech, his brother. And then we get into the next section, and it starts off talking about how long Abimelech ruled. How long did he rule? 3 years. Okay, so he ruled for 3 years. Then the men of Shechem turned against him. And Abimelech, and they turned against Abimelech, and they end up destroying him. Or he ends up destroying them. I said that back wrong. Verse 23, "Then God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the men of Shechem, and the men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech." And then you have in verse 26, it starts talking about Gaal, the son of Ebed. And then you get down to verses 50 through 57. That's where we said, remember, Abimelech died in his fight against Thebes. So, how did he die? How does Abimelech die. Because in battle, he just, you know, somebody overpowered him with a sword or what? Okay, so a woman killed him. Let's look at verse 53. It says, but a certain woman threw an upper millstone on Abimelech's head, crushing his skull. So, now, he's still alive at this point. And so, you know, I posed a question, how did Abimelech react to what was causing his death? And I know that probably wouldn't have been real clear. So I said, what did he do according to verse 54 and why? So what does 54 tell us that he did? So this lady throws the upper millstone, crushes his skull. He's dying and he calls on somebody. Who's he call on? Okay. Okay.
He wants the armor bearer to kill him so that no one would say that he's killed by a woman.
Right. Okay. Yes, ma'am. So he calls on his armor bearer to kill him. And so it wouldn't be said that he was killed by a woman. What? See how to phrase this. What does this appeal to? What does this tell us about him if he's worried about this as he's dying? Does that say something about him?
Pride.
Okay, pride. Yeah, you're dying and you're worried about that. But so yes, it does show his pride. That
it was a real dishonor to be killed by a woman.
I'm sorry, say
it
again.
Apparently, it was a real dishonor to be killed by a woman.
Okay. Okay. But this, it does appeal to his, it shows his pridefulness. Because, and not just the idea of a woman, but the a millstone versus a sword, that wasn't what the question was about. So as it stated, you know, he didn't want it to be said that he was slain by a woman. So he has, like Susan said, he had his armor bearer come and pierce him with his sword. And that's how he died. So when we're talking about Abimelech and when we're looking in this section, it's not saying some of the words that we're used to seeing, especially the things we're writing down on our chart. It's not bringing up that, you know, how God sent a deliverer and things such as that. It doesn't use these type of terms with him. These type of terms we saw and we will continue to see with some of the other judges. It doesn't state that he judged Israel or saved them or delivered them. It doesn't use this terminology. God did not raise him up. It doesn't state that God was with him. We do see these kinds of terms used with the other judges. Because remember, that's what the other judges were. These were people that the Lord raised up to deliver these people. But in this case, we know that Abimelech usurped his authority. And we actually know that God was against him. God did not give him this authority. Like we said, he usurped it. And in verses 56 and 57 show that God repaid Abimelech and Shechem for the wickedness. And the curse of Jotham came upon them. So let's read 56 and 57. It says, thus God repaid the wickedness of Abimelech, which he had done to his father in killing his 70 brothers. Also, God returned all the wickedness of the men of Shechem on their heads, and the curse of Jotham, the son of Zerubbabel, came upon them. Remember, this is the curse of the younger brother. And that came upon them. So then you have chapter 10, 1 through 2. Again, this is just a very short section where it's going to mention two judges. And we've seen this before. Sometimes there's not a whole lot of detail about these judges. Basically, it tells you their name, where they're from, and how many years they judged. And we've seen that on some of the others. In 10, 1 through 2, it says that Tola judged. Tola of Issachar judged Israel 23 years. And then in verses 3 through 5, it says Jair of Gilead judges Israel 22 years. And doesn't have a whole lot of extra information on that. Has a little more on this than some had. But that's the main importance of these two, that we see who they were, where they were from, and how long they judged.
Ready?
Yes, sir.
One thing before you class in. The story of Abimelech shows the absolute foolishness of the decision made because there are relatives.
Yeah. Yeah. And they all paid for that, didn't they?
Yep, that's the defining factor in many people's decisions about me. Well, there are relatives.
Yeah.
So,
good point, Steve. I agree. Some people, that is not saying that there isn't some importance to that, but that is not the importance.
Right, wrong.
Correct. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I agree. But people do weigh that very heavily and give that more importance than what it deserves at time. And like you said, this is a good example where that didn't work out for them. So we finished up 6 through 8 and got through 9, 10 through 10:5. So our next class will be, I haven't put it in the back yet. I was making copies and I was having technical difficulties. So there will be some back there before you leave. So if you'll need to grab one of those on your way out. But thank you for your attention.